Hello and welcome to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. I'm Brian Strauser, Principal and Chief Executive here at BrightPath. In this week's episode, I want to continue our discussion about wielding influence as a resilience leader, sharing some themes from our recent publication, The Strategic Edge, Wielding Influence as a Resilience Leader. In this week's episode, I want to talk about something that simply doesn't live in a plan or in a checklist, but it defines your ability to lead before, during, and after a disruption. And that are the relationships that you have as a resilience leader. Not just any relationships, but what we think of as the game-changing relationships that you need to be able to have as the foundation of your ability to wield influence in your organization. These kind of relationships are the connections that make or break your ability to influence decisions, shape strategy in your organization, and really expand the reach of your resilience program. I'm going to walk you through the three-tiered model that we have developed and use here at BrightPath that shows you exactly where you need to focus and why. So I want to start with what we think of as the foundation of these game-changing relationships, and that is the table stakes. The table stakes are the folks that, as your core operational partners, these are the relationships that you absolutely have to have as a resilience leader. Without these relationships, your program just doesn't run. It's you. Without these relationships, it's you in a cubicle or in your home office at this end of a Zoom or Teams meeting or a WebEx trying to run your program without any influence or any relationships in the organization. So here's who those relationships are. Your CISO, your Chief Information Security Officer. You're both managing significant risk in the organization. They need you from a crisis management, business continuity, and disaster recovery standpoint. Your work has to align, and you have to figure out how to manage a significant cybersecurity incident together. Your Chief Security Officer, or whatever you call the leader of your corporate security or global security or physical security organization. But physical security still matters, even in this cyber age that we live in today, especially when we're talking about things like protest activity, civil unrest, natural disasters, workplace violence, geopolitical instability. These are all critical elements that a global security team handles. The third is the disaster recovery leader. Whether it's part of your organization or not, you have an IT counterpart and you are tied at the hip during a major technology incident. Your program for business continuity and crisis management needs to align with their capabilities. The fourth is audit. Audit understands, controls, risk appetite, and they have a conversation. They have a regular relationship with the board, particularly if you're a publicly traded company. You need to have alignment with each other. And lastly, your crisis leader. Whether that's you or someone on your team or it's somewhere else in the organization, you have to be in sync. And there should be no surprises in a major incident. Your programs need to align. Your job here in these table stakes relationships is to build trust, ensure that your messaging is aligned, and get clear on expectations of each other. If you're out of sync with this group, then you are dead in the water before any real work of wielding influence in your organization begins. The second set of relationships is what we think of as tier two, the value relationships. These are the people who multiply your impact in the organization. Now, these relationships are not always obvious, but when you invest in them, it provides you and your program the ability to scale. So let's break some of these down. The first are communications, your communications team, which is usually in marketing or sometimes in human resources or finance. You do not want to wait for a crisis to have partnerships here. Go co-create your messaging cadence and communication strategy now. The worst time to try to figure this out is when the phones are ringing and you are in a crisis, particularly a reputational crisis. The second is compliance. Your compliance team knows the regulatory landscape that you're faced with, and they can keep you out of trouble or they can help you walk right into it. You want to be friends. Third is your enterprise risk management team. You want your risks represented in the enterprise risk regime that is there, but you also, as the resilience leader, bring significant mitigation strategies to those enterprise risks. And when those enterprise risks become reality, it is your team at the forefront of dealing with that crisis that has been created. This is how you get there, is having those relationships. Your industry peers are another set of relationships. You want to learn from them. You want to share insights with them. You want to benchmark with them, but you want to be able to leverage the collective wisdom of your sector in these relationships. Next is HR. If you're not working with your human resources team on crisis management planning, especially for workforce impact and how you take care of the team in a crisis, you're missing a major vulnerability and you're missing an important way to make sure that your organization can recover. Next is your CIO, your chief information officer. Maybe it's your chief technology officer, as you call it in your organization. Their technology roadmap influences how you think about your recovery strategy. You should align this now and not later. And lastly, the CFO. Now, this is a power move. Your CFO is someone where you need to be able to speak the language of finance. You need to be able to speak the language of risk the way that a chief financial officer will think about this. Frame your program as about being the protection, about the ability to take on that risk, but also the protection of your organization's financial capabilities, your reputation and operations, and you will have that in with your CFO. It is this second tier of value relationships where the real elevation of your role and your influence happens. This is about expanding visibility and embedding resilience across the business. Lastly is what we think of as tier three, the differentiator. This is where strategic influence and visibility for you as the resilience leader really come together. And these are relationships that don't just make your program successful, they make you an indispensable leader to the organization. Here's who matters: your CEO. This isn't just about visibility or getting time with your CEO, but this is about framing resilience as a strategic advantage for your organization. To get in the door here, you need to be perceived as a business leader in the organization and not just the man or woman that does business continuity. You need to be perceived as someone who helps the organization take on risk and achieve your business strategies. And you don't do that without alignment. Your audit or risk committee of your board, depending on how your board is set up, they are increasingly interested in resilience. And in my experience, they are seeing less and less from resilience leaders because a lot of resilience leaders simply don't have the strategic mindset to be able to operate in front of that group. When you show up before a committee like this of board members, you need to be brief, you need to be focused, and you need to be aligned to the organizational strategies. And again, you need to speak like a business leader, not as a business continuity manager. The third are your business unit leaders, your business leaders across the organization. This is where disruption lives. You want to help them be able to build resilience into their strategies and plans on how they're moving forward as an organization. Next are your public sector partners out there in government. During major incidents like natural disasters or geopolitical disruption, you need those relationships in advance. There's an old story about the U.S. Northern Command, the U.S. military command responsible for protecting the homeland, and that really leads U.S. military support for the Federal Emergency Management Agency and helps provide National Guard units and others to respond to these major disasters here in the United States. Their private sector office, who is charged with this particular mission about building relationships with the private sector, their challenge coin, the coin they give out to partners and others for recognition, the outer rim of the coin says, "When you need a friend, it's too late to make one." And there's nothing truer than that about public sector partners. You need to build those relationships now with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, with your state emergency management agency, with local city and county emergency managers, with the FBI and others, so that you have those relationships built in advance. And of course, other executives, you may have leaders for operations as a COO, you may have an innovation team, you may have a chief strategy officer, you might have a chief product officer, your CEO may have a chief of staff. These are all leaders in which your goal is to position yourself and your program as an enabler of the business and not just some blocker of progress or some compliance function in the organization. And then lastly, of course, your major third parties. If you're not factoring in vendor risk or supplier continuity, raw materials and others, then you're missing a critical part of your recovery model, and you should be involved with those companies and even practicing with them to ensure that your company is ready to recover when your third parties are disrupted. The takeaway here is that these relationships are all proactive. They won't seek you out. You have to show up with value as a business leader, with strategic insights, with clear language, and a mindset of helping them enable the strategies of your business and help that business achieve the strategic objectives that your leaders have set. So as we wrap this up, here's a challenge for you. Take a look at your network with this model of game-changing relationships in mind. Where are you at with each of these tiers? What relationships do you already have in place at each level of this tiering? Where are the gaps for you? What one relationship at each level will you invest in the next quarter, in the next 3 months? And remember that plans don't drive influence. You don't get more influence by building better plans. People do. And the relationships that you build do. And people's perception of the value and the strategy that you're helping provide are what helps drive influence. The work that you and your teams do is important, but the relationships that you build help define that impact. This is how we lead before the crisis hits, before the disruption hits. This is how you gain the strategic edge and how your program gains a strategic edge in your organization. If you want to go deeper, I would encourage you to read our full report, The Strategic Edge, Wielding Influence as a Resilience Leader, available now at brightpath.com and in the link here in the show notes. That's it for this edition of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. I'll be back next week with another new episode. Be well.